Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This episode, we have a featured roundtable with three drivers, one being a driver owner, representing the three brands that partake in IMSA's new Daytona Prototype International class. I asked my pal Scott Sharp, who is a co-owner and driver of the Tequila Patron ESM Nissan Onroak DPI, Jonathan Bomarito, who's one of the lead development drivers and just one of the lead badasses in general, for the Mazda Racing Mazda RT24P Daytona Prototype International, and the defending, reigning, IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship Prototype Champ, Dane Cameron, who leads the number 31 Action Express Racing Cadillac DPI VR Daytona Prototype International effort. Got these three together during the roar before the 24, had about a half hour or so with them. Just want to do a bit of a round table on these new cars. What they like about them, what's different about them, inside the car, what they do that they enjoy. And also dove into some other topics that I think are going to be not only relevant for the upcoming Rolex 24 at Daytona, the first race of the year, but also looking forward. Scott Sharp in particular, as someone between himself and Ed Brown, other owner of the team, they are blessed with the finances to do whatever they please in terms of where they race and what they race. Spoke with Scott about why they chose to opt in with DPI, collaborate with Nissan, collaborate with Ligier to put together this beautiful, crazy, awesome looking car of theirs and come race that two car program here in IMSA for the full season, move over from the WEC. Why do they do that? What value does DPI present not only the team, but also sponsor Patron and their other sponsors? Spoke with Bomarito about what it's like being out there with the other cars in these new DPIs, how they mingle, the WEC spec P2s that they'll be competing against in prototype, how they have fared against them. Spoke with Cameron about just a variety of things. Also looking at coming into the first race of the year, 24 hours, the Super Bowl for IMSA with brand new prototypes. None of them. There's not a single manufacturer, maybe barring Cadillac, just a little bit, that feels confident from a overall mileage and durability and testing and what they've learned standpoint. So grueling and brutal to start off this new formula with a bunch of cars that for the most part have just showed up and don't have nearly enough time in them for anyone to feel like, yep, we can get through 24 hours. It was interesting to speak with the three, looking at their perspectives going into the race, what they would consider to be a positive result. We have one IndyCar champion in Scott. We have Bomarito and Cameron, two Atlantic Series badasses that should have been in IndyCar. They should be IndyCar champs as well, but really need to speak with three Americans who are dug into this new DPI formula. And in terms of winning, we know that they're going to be integral in getting to that finish line for their respective manufacturers. So great to sit down with them. You can get more episodes of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Check out our new Facebook page. That's where everything's going to hit first. You can also subscribe on iTunes if you are a fan of that delivery method. So off we go with Nissan's Scott Sharp, Mazda's Jonathan Bomarito, and Cadillac's Dane Cameron. Scott, maybe I'll start with you. As someone who has had the fortune to drive GTPs, WSCs, you name it, what came to mind when you heard about this DPI formula IMSA came up with, and what interested you and Ed and your team to say, you know what, we need to get in on this?
Yeah, great to be here today. I think we had 2 years on the Global WC Series and really had a big desire, everyone on the team did, to come back. You know, we're a U.S.-based team. We're mostly Americans, and we want to be racing in the U.S. So hearing the development of this new class and the fact that the sort of leading edge of prototype cars was going to be ushered in. And on top of that, I think having the manufacturer influence from their technology side, from their promotional side, it just sounded like, it's the beginning of a really fantastic era. So it was pretty much a no-brainer for us to want to come back and be a part of it.
Jonathan, you've been instrumental in helping to develop the Mazda RT24P, coming off of the previous Mazda prototype, which a little bit of an older design, one that was carried forward a few more years and maybe expected
What were your initial impressions when you saw the development of the car happening, and then when you got your first few laps behind the wheel? Did it stand out as, all right, this really is 2017 that I'm seeing and feeling? How big of a step was it?
Yeah, I mean, it was an exciting process, you know, seeing some of the design pictures and those beginning build stages with the car. I know Mazda was very excited on, you know, now they have this prototype car with the rules package where they can have some of their design cues and actual Mazda designers involved with the process. And then, you know, getting through all that and the build, and now it's time to shake down the car and put it to, you know, to the test and start driving the car in anger a little bit. And first impression was, wow, I mean, a huge step forward. I mean, in every way, from, you know, how you sit in the car and, you know, the ergonomics, from switch panels and LED dashes, and but then the grip level. I mean, the car has a lot more downforce than the previous, you know, like you had said, the older Lola P2 platform. More grip everywhere, high speed, low speed, braking, just in every way. And we have a little bit more horsepower too. So it's a really exciting format. I mean, it's very cool that everybody's in this same, on this roughly the same package now, you know, where yes, it's controlled, but every manufacturer still has some room, and there's differences and there's excitement. It's just not a spec chassis for everybody, and dampers, and there's still a lot of development happening. So it's 17's really exciting. I think you already see it here at the Roar. Yeah. the excitement between the fans and the teams, and you know, all the drivers are trying to look in everybody else's car.
Dave might have just shown me a couple photos of yours asking a few questions.
So you know, we're all trying to check everybody's new cool ride out and see see what, oh man, I like how they did this or whatnot. So it's exciting. It's fun to be here.
Dane, we have your Cadillac DPI-VR, for example. It's built off of the WEC P2 spec Dallara. But with that Dallara, you have the engineering and brain power might of General Motors, Pratt & Miller, a lot of really sharp entities coming together to build that Cadillac architecture on top of the base format. That's different than the people buying the WEC P2s. They buy it, they run it, that's it. What's it been like for you on the Action Express side, maybe you specifically, in trying to help either influence or shape or contribute to the overall development of this package? Because again, it's not like they're just handing it off and you show up and drive it. You've had to be a part of that.
Well, I think you know, for all three of us and all three of these brands, it's a lot to do and a lot of expectation as well. A lot of big partners involved in all three of these, you know, DPI programs at this stage, and certainly a lot of expectations. You know, our team having won the last three championships, and obviously with GM as well. So certainly a lot of expectation and pressure that comes with that. So I know they're hungry to continue that. We got a lot of good people involved, a few new people obviously with Dallara. You know, they were with Wayne's team before, but it's a new group for us to deal with. So trying to figure out all the right faces, and for us it's just been a massive transition, probably almost even a little bit bigger than the other guys, because you know, switching over from the old Daytona prototype concept to this car, all the tooling is different, how you're doing your setups, how you get in the car. We went from right hand drive to left hand drive, you know, complete electronics overhaul. So for us it's just been a lot to take in and a lot to try to understand, and just getting into all the little bits of fine-tuning, and well, can we move this here, can we put that there, what if we change this bracket, what if we move this over here. You know, a lot of the heavy lifting was for sure done between Dallara, between GM. Wayne's group had a lot of influence as well, so we kind of came in a little bit on the backside of that. More than anything, it's just trying to improve everything and draw on all the knowledge that this team has and these groups have to, you know, it's hard to bring this new package and this new format to life at the toughest race and the most important race of the year for everyone, being the 24-hour, and you know, that's the one where everything's to play for. So you're trying to cover all your bases and make sure you're as prepared as possible to try to win this thing in a couple weeks.
Scott, what has it been like for you? Because you obviously are a driver, one of the lead drivers, but you're also someone who's had to mobilize the Nissan on-road DPI effort from the beginning. This wasn't calling up and saying, hi, could I get one? It was calling up and saying, hi, can we make one?
Yeah.
What was the timeline for having to kick that off, and how quickly have things come together? Because I see nothing but hard work and elbows moving and wrenches spinning over in the garage. So you guys are still dialing up, but How big has that effort been actually having to create a DPI program?
Yeah, it's been a lot of work for sure. And it came together quite late compared to these other two programs. There was a couple other programs we were in negotiation with, and I think we pretty much made the decision, sometime in May that we were coming back here, and it was just trying to find the best partner. So not only was it getting the deal done with Nissan, and of course on Rope definitively, they were building the car and wanted to be back in North America for sure. So it was just, who are we going to put in the back of the car? And but I think the biggest thing has been the cars came together quickly. Their WEC spec car, I think, was on a pretty good time frame and actually rolled out fairly early. The big was the transformation of the whole Nissan package to the car, and that took a lot longer than expected, as well as the aerodynamic approvals to make it look Nissan-esque like it needed to, and strongly enough. So that's really, I think, those combined factors pushed us way late. And as always, building a brand new car and some of the tooling, some of the pieces you're waiting for. So for us to get our first car, literally came right before Christmas. We ran out to Sebring to have a decent shakedown. And the other car came last Friday.
Yeah.
It turned its first lap yesterday. So we're behind, but that's okay. It's part of the program. It's the pieces we're dealt at the moment, and we'll make the best of it.
Maybe to follow up on that, you guys are using this roar test as your first real hardcore test. You were able to shake the cars down, but what does it say about the quality of the people involved that, you guys aren't at the top of the timesheets yet, but it's not as if you're a mile off. So essentially, right out of the box, you're in the hunt, and there's a lot more to develop. It tells me you guys, it must be a pretty strong package.
I mean, we hope so. Time will tell. First, you look at the elements involved. I mean, we're pretty excited about the team we have. They've been through this a few times with the HPD car and our other chassis we've had, and you combine that with the Oak personnel, it's a pretty strong combination. It's proved that the last couple of years. I think OnRoke has been running a little bit of an older car in the WEC design-wise. And been very anxious to have the 17 car come out. So we had high expectations that regardless, the car was going to be pretty quick. And while the Nissan engine has never been in a prototype chassis, it's been pretty successful elsewhere. So
the installation's beautiful, by the way.
They've done an amazing job. Yeah. So it's just a matter of perfecting all that, working out the small details, obviously getting the reliability and all the kinks out of it, I think, before we really know where we're at. But so far, really encouraging.
So Jonathan, new car's coming. Great, can't wait to get in them and just put in a million miles, or we're going to break every lap record. Oh crap, gearbox is running hotter than we expected, or this shut off, or why did that happen? We haven't had a chance to do that for a little while, which I think is actually kind of cool, right? It's not the same old tube frame DP that you can't kill and, just runs forever. these are fantastic cars. We're not going to see their ultimate pace at the first time they've ever competed, but what's it been like for you going, being a central part of the development and knowing that half of development is improving, the other half is solving problems? Are you okay with the problem-solving part? Do you enjoy being a part of that, or you just can't wait till it's over?
I mean, I do enjoy that part of racing. I really enjoy testing and working with the engineers and contributing. You know, when you're sitting in the car, they're telling you with all the telemetry what's running hot and what's not, and we give as much feedback as we feel as we can. But I do enjoy that part. When we first got the car, we had some overheating issues with the transmission, and we would do 2-3 lap runs. And, you just shift the plan however you can to keep learning as much as you can to maximize for that day. In between, they're, changing coolers around and lines, and, it's cool, us drivers don't necessarily think about things like the engineers do, and it's neat to see their brains working just in overdrive. Okay, if we, reroute this line over to here and this cooler with this one and this heat exchanger here, and, they're working so hard all the time to put these things into place. And every time we come to the track, there's a different configuration, more knowledge that we've gained, and it's part of the program. I think this year's race is going to be really interesting because there's a lot of teams that are still I think every single team that's here is still figuring certain things out.
Yeah.
So, and they don't know what piece could potentially bite them. Just because it hasn't yet doesn't mean it's going to come up. you know, none of the cars have enough miles on them to where maybe there is an inherent problem that we just don't know about yet. So, and I think everybody's in the same boat. I think you could potentially see an outlier come to the front of the field. It's going to be exciting. I think it's cool for the fans. Like I said, I mean, that's really the most important part about this whole deal is I think the fans have been really receptive and excited about it.
Dean, you seems like your 31 car has, if there is an electric gremlin, they know your address better than some others. Unfortunately, I don't know if maybe a little bit of that extra downtime has given you a chance to interact with fans more, but what are you hearing from fans? What are you telling fans about the driving experience? I'm sure everyone's asking, what's it like? How's it different? But what has that exchange been like with these new cars that people seem to really be fired up about?
Yeah, like you and Jonathan said, I think everyone's really excited about the platform. And I think for the series, it's just great now to be, you know, we have a plan, we have a timeline, we've got rules. It's a bit simpler. There's no balancing these two types of cars. There's no, you know, there's no more this camp, that camp. It's kind of all the same. So I think that's a lot cleaner, a lot tidier. That seems to just, you know, get everybody really excited about it again, really excited about top level sports car racing in this country. The cars are going a bit quicker. So it's good to, you know, everybody likes when you're going quicker than before, higher top speeds or new lap records. Everybody loves all that kind of stuff, especially from the driver's seat. So everyone's excited about it. I think everyone really likes the way that they look. Everyone's got a favorite. You know, some people think this looks better. Some people that looks better. You know, they all look different, so you can tell what they are. They all sound a bit different as well, which I think is great also. So I think it ticks a lot of boxes for the sports car fan who's like turbo cars, or I like V6 cars. I like, you know, big V8s. We got a little bit of everything, or guys who are, you know, have their own brand. So I think, you know, more and more people are still talking about getting involved in the next coming years now that there's a bit of a plan and a bit of stability for the platform. So everyone seems really excited about it. You know, there's no more, I hate that thing's ugly. There's no more of that. Everything's like, people have a favorite, but everyone seems excited about it. They like that the styling cues are there. And everyone's kind of got their favorite feature between all the cars. So I think that's really great. And I mean, I haven't really heard anything negative from anybody from the outside. And it's great to see, even, you know, today the weather's pretty bad, but there's a ton of people wandering around. Everybody wants pictures. Everybody wants to see, you know, they want to know what they're all about. So it's great to see some rejuvenation for the category, for the series, for sure.
We can retire the phrase proto turtle as well. That's left in the past. Scott, you occupy a really interesting space as a driver and owner. I've never seen you more muscled up, by the way, so I don't know if, you know, we could dial up power steering a little bit more for you, buddy. But
we need it.
What did you and Ed and everybody involved with the Patron brand and all your sponsors, what did you all see in DPI that intrigued you? Because you guys have been fortunate to, whether it was race GT cars or prototypes, Europe, America, you've had options.
Right.
You could have stayed and done other things. What stood out from a value standpoint, either to the team or your sponsors, that said, let's go down this DPI path?
An interesting answer there, because I think really what's appealed to us is sort of what you've seen, I think, on a global perception of the whole DPI. You know, there was early last year, was it early last year, even late of 15, when the rules were starting to come out in WEC for P2. You know, and everyone was like, okay, how's this going to work, the global platform with IMSA? And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, the WEC format was the only way to go, of course. And everyone was hoping there was going to be manufacturers involved in that. And we were shocked when it came out, this is going to be a spec formula. I mean, you know, they're not going to make the guys that want to play in P2 jump up to a P1 program at exponential cost.
So 20 times
why would you limit the manufacturers from being involved? We were all very confused on that. And then, okay, everyone's sort of over there, sort of, I'd say, looking down on IMSA a little bit without, you know, how's this little, you know, DPI formula going to be? And, oh, you guys are going to be able to come run Le Mans, but we're all sort of laughing because they know that the ACO wasn't going to make it probably very conducive to them succeeding. And so it's all sort of like, I think for a long time, looked at as like the stepchild over here. And you just sort of watch that change.
100
and we've been in some pretty conversations with some, up to the point of making our deal with Nissan, is a pretty serious two or three different boards of manufacturers that are definitively gonna be coming here. It's just they weren't ready to pull the trigger this year. And you just see that shift to A, they wanna run for overall wins, and B, they don't wanna spend whatever, how many figures is it, 12 figures or something, to be able to get the job done. And I just think in this world economy, that's the, it's and we're in the biggest market in the world. So it just proves such, I think, a great concept right now in sports car racing to be able to economically come play for the overall win. And I think that's a class that it's going to keep attracting a lot of attention.
Piggybacking on that, the last real golden era of prototypes in North America, I think we probably all agree, was ALMS mid-2000s and on with the P1, P2. The really cool thing about that, and Mazda was there as well, but for the most part, the big marquee names, a lot of them were European. It was Audi seeing value coming over, Porsche commissioning a program coming over. Obviously, Acura jumped in, so that was awesome. But there was a pretty strong European influence in decision-making matrix. What we've seen here, though, and despite obviously Nissan being Japanese, Mazda being Japanese, these are American decisions. This isn't European decisions coming over to play here. Scott, as someone who's been fortunate to race in a lot of the amazing eras, are you encouraged by the fact that we see for the first time in a while America embracing its domestic prototype formula, starting off with three brands, but we know that there'll be more coming? But are you feeling a little bit nostalgic for, like, yeah, okay, I remember when this used to be the culture, and it seems to be on its way back?
Well, wholeheartedly. I think we all want to be a part of a series or a class that has manufacturing involvement, people pushing, working. You're trying to do, even if it's small development, something to make your car better every week. You're not just driving a spec car. At the same time, though, you've watched all those programs. They come and they go. And why? Because they cost exponential dollars.
Crazy.
More
Crazy.
Than the manufacturers ever wanted to spend. And you see people like, HPD. We've had a fantastic long relationship with them, but they're in a different economic climate. They can't afford to be a factory-backed, humongously many million-dollar type program anymore. It's got to make more financial sense to them. So naturally, they're not going to be able to go play in that old kind of environment. And same, look what's happening. I mean, everyone's fearful what's going to happen to the WEC. I mean, Audi's gone. A lot of people think if Porsche leaves, where does that leave those high exposure, big P1 type programs that are spending $400 million a year?
Yeah.
That's hard to sustain right now. So again, I think with this economic climate, it's a whole different category what it's going to take. And I think the DPI is right in the bullseye what it needs right now.
Jonathan, tell me a little bit more about the driving experience and differences that you've been able to see. I guess maybe using yesterday as the biggest benchmark, where we have every prototype brand, both spec, WEC, P2, and DPI on track. What are you seeing from the inside of your car compared to what you drove here last year that's different and or more fun or interesting? What are the areas of differences that you're seeing when you're out there in or around any of the WEC P2s? Anything jump out?
Other
than flipping the bird when you go by.
Yeah. I didn't see Dane on track.
Oh, look at that. That's a NorCal heat. I love it.
I guess that'll be night practice.
Yeah. No, to be fair, the only car that I was around was one of the ESM cars yesterday. And it was pretty close, actually. They'd gap us off a little bit of some of the slower speed power down sections, a little more torque maybe. And then towards the end of the tri-oval past start finish, we'd kind of start creeping up down into turn one braking zone. But it was really close. Like the racing, I can tell, was going to be really good. Granted, both of our programs are still getting better and better, and we're both learning a lot and have a little bit of catching up to do, but I could already see how close the cars were going to race each other. Daytona is kind of a beast of its own.
Yeah.
Not that I want to get through this race and move on already. We want to do the race, obviously. It's a fantastic event, but I'm really looking forward to Sebring. The new Continental tire, the road race tire, is a lot better, a lot more grip. We get to stack on a lot of the downforce, the high downforce setups that these cars.
Neck,
I mean, turn one and 17 at Sebring, and turn one at Road Atlanta, and the carousel Road America. Like, I'm really looking forward to some of these places. We go to Mossport. It's gonna be crazy in these cars. Yeah, so Dane's killer around Mossport. So just tracks and corners like this, it's really going to show the potential of these cars. And from a driver's standpoint, we're smiling, laughing, talking about it, because it ups everything again. Those pucker corners are going to be exponentially even more now. So it's exciting. I mean, we keep using the word exciting over and over. It really is. I mean, it's a great platform. I think the series has done an awesome job in developing this and making this a playground where the manufacturers want to be. I know Mazda, talking with John so much about it, they're really enthusiastic about being here and see a lot of potential.
Dane, you were happy as a clam after some of when we spoke after some of your tests in the Cadillac once the program was confirmed. We had some really good conversations there. What are you enjoying about the car, just purely as a driver? Forget all the PR stuff, forget everything else, just you with your helmet on, being a driver. What's standing out inside that car where you're like, okay, I'm happy I'm here?
Yeah, it's just so different. I've been in GT cars and in Daytona prototypes for the last couple of years, so you sort of get used to these big heavy things that you sort of have to wait on, and the DP was a lot of fun. I mean, I love that car. It was hard to get the most out of it, but you were always fighting it. You were always fighting something was always a little bit wrong. It was never perfect, and you had to kind of wrestle the thing all the time. So, you know, like you said at the beginning, Jonathan and I, we come from Formula Atlantic and Formula Fords and Star Mazdas and stuff like that, so to me it's kind of fun. It feels like coming home again a little bit, and you're something you can, all right, now I can stamp on the brakes and thing. You come to the fast corner and you can, you know, drive the crap out of the thing in the quick corner. And
Jeff
and
Gordon
really
was talking about getting a little bit lightheaded under braking for the first time in the Cadillac. Seriously,
really?
I'm like, wow, okay, there's some forces here.
It's cool, and like Jonathan said, the Continental's made a nice step on the road course tires. So that seems to be, better for us. And even in the DP, we always struggle with the tires because it was just so heavy. It just killed the rear tires on the thing. So now it's like, oh, now we're, you know, we're over 200 pounds lighter than we used to be, so things are a little bit easier on the tires then. So you can push harder, you push harder for longer, all those type of things. And it's just fun just to get back to just driving and just driving the crap out of something. And it's just really precise. You know, for me, it's just getting back to that. And the DP, you always had a bit of free play kind of in the steering wheel just because there was, you know, just a bit sloppy almost, really, more than anything. And now, where you were kind of taking up slack in the power steering before is sort of like you're going through kinks flat with that same amount of wheel. So it's kind of a whole different ball game again. So it's just fun to be back to something that's kind of on the limit, and you're back to making real small changes and making small tweaks to your driving style and that kind of thing. So it's fun to drive something that makes your neck a bit sore at the end of the day.
And Scott, we're not back to the, you know, make your all the blood fall out of your body speeds of like your old Acura P1 car and whatnot, but you know, these things do haul. What have you enjoyed, and mindful of the fact that you're just really getting a chance to dig in here this weekend, but you've been fired up. It seems like, you know, this formula is speaking to you as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think certainly feeling a bit like this is an extension of the car we've driven the last couple of years. Maybe it's not as eye-opening to others, but the expectation that it's all going to be refined, obviously the more power is super welcome, the little bit more efficient body I think all the cars will share. I really think that it's a challenging car. It's a fun car to drive, though. I find a lot of what they're talking about, and truly is for me a driven like an aero type car. You have to drive these cars. You're not driving it like a any kind of sedan real influence to it, and so I like that personally. So I think it's going to be a car that's a series that's going to race very well together.
Last question for you guys. We're going to come back here in a couple of weeks, and as you mentioned, Jonathan, so naturally you'd start off a brand new formula with a 24-hour race, because who wouldn't want that?
Most important race of the year.
What's the mindset for you guys, collectively, you think, for the class, or for each of you with the brands you represent? 24-hour race, I can't think of a single team, even the WEC P2 guys, that are going to go on thinking, I know everything I know. We have 100% confidence. We're never going to be in the garage at all. Do you come back here for this race with a maximum attack mentality that we might have seen of old? Or do you come here saying, maybe we're not going to sweat being the quickest bunny, knowing that there are still more questions here with these cars than we want at this point? What do you think, Dane?
Yeah, I mean, it's... for sure, it's going to be the most unpredictable 24-hour in the prototype category in many, many years here, for sure. And I think that's for sure the common theme, is nobody really knows where they stand. Nobody really knows what's the... Is it a $20,000 part that's going to let you down, or the 5 cent part? We're not really sure yet, because nobody has enough miles. Everyone's a little bit behind on where they would really like to be. And me at Action Express, they had run those cars so long, they were so kind of structured in their game plan for this race. They'd won it a number of times. They knew exactly what to do. They knew what parts were gonna, you had to watch out for, and what were the bumps in the road. So now it's kind of like, well, we're trying to get back to that plan. We're trying to think of all the things that are going to catch us out. We're trying to cover all those bases, but we just don't know. And yeah, for us, it was absolutely had to be flat out the past couple of years, and it had turned into a sprint race. So, you might see a little bit more pacing. I don't think you're going to see people rolling around trying to survive to the end. But yeah, instead of seeing 10 tents for 24 hours, you might see 8 or 9 for the first few hours, and then see if everything's okay. And people, it's for sure going to turn out to sprint at the end. But I don't think anybody knows who's got the strongest package at the moment or who's going to make it to the end. There's going to be a lot of surprises, I think, all throughout. So it'll be a different game plan, I think, for everyone. And everyone's going to have their own idea on what they think is the best. So we're still trying to go up with ours, I think, at the moment.
Jonathan, similar question, but maybe on dealing with a grid of 55 cars. More speed, obviously, with the DPIs, passing traffic, you name it. Seems like there's 1,000 Lamborghinis out there as well, and most of them are learning which corner goes where on each lap. So you're trying to get to the end with a brand new car, plus you're going faster, plus you have a lot of cars to deal with. That seems like a really easy way, right? How do you deal with all that and achieve your goals?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, what we do out there, we're thrown a lot every single lap. It's a constantly changing environment, and it's part of the fun for us. It's part of the challenge. So, I think every year we've kind of seen something different. Last year we had the new GT3 cars come in, that with the GTD field, and that changed the dynamic of how the P cars would race them drastically. With the ABS, I mean, they can break as late as we can in some of the horseshoes. It's yeah. So no longer are you it no longer is it easy to just outbrake a GT car or go around the outside of turn five. It's really changed the racing quite a bit. So yeah, we're going faster, but so are they. So that you're constantly kind of, I think even between all of the different manufacturers in GTD, one of them's really strong on the brakes, the next one's faster on the straightaway. So even how you pass every single car in that one particular field is different. So
you take an aspirin before you get in.
Yeah, yeah. your head's kind of spinning. So you're just trying to get in the, I think for the first 20 hours is getting in the flow of all of that, understanding the race, conserving the car. And like Dane said, the cars that are on the lead lap for the last 4 hours, it's a sprint race, for sure. I do think, however, you will see more of the mid-pack teams that have little gremlins fighting to get that car to lose as little time as possible, because that could be another few positions where in the past there were so many cars that were there at the end of the race.
Yeah,
once you went out, you lost 20 or 30 laps, you knew your race was done, you're finishing, next to last. Now I think if you lose 10 laps or 5 laps, instead of losing 30, if you can only lose 10 or 15, that could be a few spots.
Yeah, for sure.
And for the, for a championship, that those extra 5-6 points could make a big difference. So I think that fight and the struggle that the crew members are going to go through in the middle race when we have these little gremlins, if we do or whoever does, are going to be even more important this year.
Last question for you, Scott. What's a successful completion of the Rolex 24 for you with Tequila Patron ESM on your debut with a Nissan? Obviously, you want to be repeating last year,
right?
But
that's the focus. But in reality, we're way behind. The reliability is the hugest thing, especially going into Sebring, and you want to be gaining points on all these races. So for us, if we're able to get both cars to the end and certainly have one in the running some form for the end, I think we'd be feeling pretty successful from where the true inception of our program has started, which is only a couple weeks ago.
People looked so happy last year, jumping on the roof, waving both flags. You might just let them do that anyways. If you don't win, that was the happiest I've ever seen that kid. Guys, thanks so much. And, I actually really look forward to coming back here next year. Maybe we can get together and kind of see where the year has gone with these cars. So thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
And that was the first Daytona Prototype International Roundtable in the Marshall Pruitt Podcast with Dane Cameron from the Cadillac program, Jonathan Bomarito from Mazda, and Scott Sharp from Nissan. Again, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast first on our new Facebook page. Please join up there. You can also subscribe on iTunes. And as always, I'm Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.